the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Jeff, this email. I'm getting all these emails addressed to, what's his name? Jeff, the guy who's dead to us. Jeff, who's too cool for Scotty DJ and anybody else for that matter who doesn't want to go to the party, you're thinking way too much about this. Yes, Scotty is white and lame, but he's differently lame than Jeff, Sarah, yourself, etc. So tell them all to jump off the Fremont Bridge so the rest of us can get on with the rest of the show. Blah, blah, blah. All right, there you go. It's 503-733-2970. In mere moments, we go to Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Alex, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Well, Rick, I think it's a sad state of affairs when Scotty J has to answer the phone. The first question he asks is, do you hate Scotty J?
Is that how he's answering the phones right now?
Yes.
Fantastic. I wonder what the answer typically is. Scotty says he was taking a poll. So when people would call up about whatever, he would take that opportunity. The secondary purpose was to poll them about their hatred of him. Fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to call up. It seems like yesterday, but that you guys were joking about somebody who sent a CD to you with his name misspelled on a
Scotty
marquee.
J.
But I think that's right about tax time last year, 1 year ago, that Scotty J came and joined the wonderful Rick Emerson Show.
That probably is true. I'd have to check the date, but that might be true, sir.
Yeah. So all right. let's all stop disparaging the poor Scotty J.
Maybe I'll go dig up his air check. I think his air check is somewhere up in my office. All right.
Oh, I think that makes a good 2 o'clock.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye-bye. Right,
there you go. That's Alex. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, he is your president, your prophet, your seer, and revelator.
It's time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Incidentally, a school attack in U.S. history. 32 people are dead and 29 injured after shootings in a dorm in a classroom at Virginia Tech. And apparently this started around 7:15 this morning when one person was killed and others were wounded at multiple locations inside a dorm. 2 hours later, another shooting at an engineering and science classroom resulted in multiple casualties. And let's see here. Bill Salmon has two kids who go to that school.
When I first talked to them, at that point, all we knew that it was, you know, shots were fired, and it was very sketchy information. And it really has been, the gravity and the magnitude has been sort of descending on me since then, that how serious this is. I mean, this is an historic massacre.
I don't, okay, and maybe we don't have answers to some of these things, but I am confused. Were both of these shootings by the same guy?
They say yes.
But they were both at the same school,
yes.
But 2 hours apart?
Yeah.
Well, how does that work? That's like, I mean, I'm not trying to be flip about this. I just don't understand. That's like if somebody decided to shoot up the kitchen here, and then later decided to shoot up the upstairs where the sales guys are. Like, why?
There was some distance between these two buildings. So apparently,
they don't have phones? Hey, a guy's here shooting everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I guess, I mean, I imagine we'll find out.
I suppose if you shot someone before the cops get there, you have a chance to get away and hide somewhere, would you not?
I suppose. I guess I would have imagined they would have evacuated the entire campus, though. If 2 hours had passed, you figure they would have, especially if they don't have the guy in custody, which they clearly did not, it seems like they would have sent everybody at the school home. It's very strange. It's like if there was a shooting, let's say you were at a mall.
Well, they locked down quite a few buildings.
All right. Well, it's all very complex. And so this is what? How many people dead?
So we have 32 dead.
Damn, man.
29 injured.
I mean, that's insane. That's, I mean, all right. Well, okay. Go ahead. Well, I guess we'll be hearing more about this throughout the day.
And this dad said there is a message here to be learned.
This kind of thing can happen anywhere. You think this kind of thing can only happen in a big, bad city, but a sleepy little town like Blacksburg, Virginia, is not immune to some lunatic going on a shooting rampage.
Well, in fact, it seems like it happens more in small little towns.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it happens, I guess. Where was the McDonald's shooter? That wasn't L.A. proper, was it?
No, that was down towards San Diego.
I mean, it's always sort of the smaller towns where people go crazy in this particular way. I think in the big city, I don't know why, but I think the big city doesn't typically have things like this. These things are all in sort of mid to small level towns.
Student Amanda Johnson witnessed a man jump from a building after hearing shots fired.
As I was walking, I heard 6 rounds fired. I've been target shooting since I was a little kid, so I knew what the sounds were, so I got low and I just ran. I saw a young man jump out of a window out of Norris Hall, and so me and another kid grabbed him and helped him get off the field and got him into somebody's car.
Apparently, two students jumped from these buildings.
How high are we talking about?
I don't know. Student Michael Bryan said he received emails from the university.
Sent out the first email, and it didn't seem like classes were canceled, so we're going to class. I heard the second gunshot when I left my building, and right after that, they sent out another email telling all the students to get in. And finally, in the third email, they actually said classes were canceled.
He said he finally received a fourth email.
I believe they sent out a fourth email not too long ago saying that there was a second shooting and that just students stay in, everything's still on lockdown.
Meanwhile, a student, Matt Mulroney, said he was just coming on campus for his classes when it occurred.
Everyone was trying to, like, stop me from going on campus, so I called, like, Virginia Tech's, like, main directory to see, like, you know, what's going on. I asked them, I'm like, yeah, I heard, like, everyone's getting shot on campus, and they're like, yeah, but we advise you guys to just proceed with caution.
What?
Who said that?
I'll play it again for you.
Okay.
Everyone was trying to, like, stop me from going on campus, so I called, like, Virginia Tech's, like, main directory to see, like, you know, what's going on. I asked them, I'm like, yeah, I heard, like, everyone's getting shot on campus, and they're like, yeah, but we advise you guys to just proceed with caution.
Hey, listen, it's the sound of a giant lawsuit being filed.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, I can't. Okay, somebody said here, Rick, the two buildings in question are 15 minutes apart.
Yeah,
with a walk.
Mm-hmm.
And the campus is big, hundreds of buildings, 2,600 acres, 25,000 students.
Huh. He said it was a very confusing situation.
It was an engineering building. He was already outside. I mean, no one really knew what was going on whatsoever. It was a really wild scene.
Yeah, somebody clarified the McDonald's shooting was in San Ysidro, California.
San Ysidro.
All right. So,
and now that's a children's playground of all things.
Is that true, really?
Yeah.
That was the first one. That was, to my recollection, that was the first big mass murder in American history. That was sort of the beginning of that era, was when that guy left the house. In what, 86 or whenever that was?
Yeah.
84, something like that, mid-80s. And the guy said the creepiest thing, it just sounds so ludicrous. The guy had, like, his camouflage and a hunting rifle in, like, July. And his wife said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm going hunting at, like, 10 a.m. on a Tuesday. And she said, for what? And he said, humans. And then she said later, I didn't think anything of it, as she's leaving the house with a high-powered gun, saying he's going to hunt some humans. Because how could you possibly see that that was going to go wrong? And then he went to McDonald's and mowed a bunch of people down. All right, so now the guy's dead, right? This guy in Virginia?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
Student Leah Borden said she's thankful she never made it to class.
I was running out of my room to go to class because I was running late, and I just happened to look at my computer on my way out, and my friend who goes to Shepherd University in West Virginia had IM me and asked me if I was okay because there was a shooter on campus.
All right, let's see. This email says, from what I understand, after the first shooting, they locked down just the dorm since that's where they thought he was at. Of course, he was no longer there. He left. That gave the guy time to go across campus for more shooting in the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like, I mean, maybe they don't want to start a panic. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to second guess the cops. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But, I mean, I guess there's no good answer, because if you tell all 25,000 people to go home, then I guess the theory is he walks out with one of the other 25,000 and you never catch him. I guess that's the deal. If he's there shooting and you send 25,000 people home, then he's just someone in the crowd, and the cops, you can't search 25,000 people as they're leaving. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the theory is he would have been able to get away, which is why they didn't tell everybody just to leave. But unfortunately, that left a whole bunch of people there to, for him to shoot. I wonder what kind. I mean, I don't mean for this to sound morbid. It doesn't really need my help to be morbid. I really want to. Wonder what kind of gun we're talking about here, because
I read it was a couple of handguns.
I wonder if these. Well, all right. Let's see, Rick. Don't forget Charles Whitman, the Texas Bell Tower sniper. That was in the '60s. It's true. Well, there have been a couple of these. There was that school in Ireland, like way back in 1930 or whatever, where that guy killed like 50 people. That's the one they always point to. But it didn't really start in earnest, I don't think. Maybe this did happen all the time, like 50 years ago, and we just never heard about it because of the media. Because there was Charles Whitman, as it made famous in Full Metal Jacket, where they talk about Charles Whitman. When they always talk about a guy in a clock tower, they always mean, you know, somebody will reference that. You know, well, there's some guy in a clock tower shooting. They're referencing Charles Whitman. There's Charles Whitman, and then there was Charles Starkweather. But it seems like this really kicked into high gear in the 80s. And then, of course, that nitwit in Arkansas, and then there was Kip Kinkle, came with a hole in his head, and then there was, what's their guts at Columbine. So, all right.
So that's it for now. Let's take a little break from it anyway.
All right. A bunch of people dead, including the gunman, fortunately, in Virginia. So we'll have more about that as it unfolds.
A poisonous cloud interrupts a wedding reception. This took place in Portland. 14 people, 13 of them children, were taken to the hospital over the weekend after hazardous gas interrupted their pool party. This happened at Embassy Suites near PDX, which is on 82nd. A relative of several sickened children said a strange odor filled the pool room, making many of the boys and girls cough and vomit. A maintenance man was working in a nearby storage room where the chemicals got mixed. He became sick and was taken to the hospital with the children. Another adult refused treatment. The hazmat team took samples of chemicals and monitored the air. They determined the chemicals were muriatic acid and sodium disinfectant, commonly used as a pool cleaner. So these are pool chemicals that disrupted a wedding. Meanwhile, this is awful mean. Burglars ransacked the Bend home of a 14-year-old paralyzed over the weekend when his family was visiting him in the hospital. A family friend was house-sitting and was away temporarily when the burglars broke in. There's no indication anything was stolen or seriously damaged. And this is the family of Tyler Eklund, who remains paralyzed from the neck down after falling during a practice run at the snowboard competition at Lake Tahoe.
This is like every year where there's a bunch of those Christmas tree Christmas thefts.
They stole all the presents.
Yeah, that's how the stories always end too. They even took the angel on top of the tree. Oh, there you go. Well, that ninth circle exists for a reason, I guess.
Okay, so we're all curious what was said on what is left of the Ima Show, what it is now. This morning, they found longtime Amos in the Morning newsman Charles McCourt, so he didn't get fired. Charles McCourt picked up the dialogue on WFAN, where Don Imus left it.
He feels horrible about what he did, what he said, the mistake he made, and has said so time and again, and apologized.
So Charles McCourt did not get fired?
No.
Did everybody, what about the Bernard McGurk?
I don't see his name mentioned anywhere.
Huh.
Because there's
a little justice done if he's gone.
Yes.
All the problems he's caused. Bo Dietl's still rich, though.
Yeah, that's true.
There's Bernard McGurk.
But we don't know that for a fact. Maybe he was there and didn't speak.
Maybe. I would like to think that he was fired. And Sid Rosenberg, who's been fired like 100 times already, that guy's just wrapped in Teflon.
Yeah.
I can't believe that guy was brought back after. I mean, he's the one who's. I mean, he's made any number of terrible remarks. So. Charles McCourt, who does seem like the most balanced and level-headed member of that staff.
He just sits there and reads the paper.
He just sits and goes, that's right, I'm in.
And he wears those 1970s headphones.
I don't know where they buy them. Dr. Laura wears those same headphones. They look like a stethoscope stuck in your ears. Yeah.
I remember they're from the 70s.
Dr. Laura wears the same ones at KFI or whatever the hell she does her program from now. So Charles McCourt is still there. But I saw Imus was interviewed somewhere over the weekend. He was... I don't know, making the typical noise that you would expect about going to satellite and so forth.
Yeah, he said he could get a job anywhere.
I will. Well, I mean, even if the sponsors were pulling last week, you're making $25 million a year for a company. You're not going to have difficulty getting another job. And that's just the cold, hard fact of life, my friends. So I...
He sent an email to Newsweek magazine saying that he could, quote, go to work tomorrow, bigger money, better deal.
Yeah.
But he has a summer of kids to cowboy with, and then we'll see.
And I don't know whether there's probably some no-compete clause or something, too. He probably can't go to work anywhere. Although maybe if they fire him, because in radio, typically, there's a clause in your contract that says that if you quit, you can't go to work anywhere else. For
3 months.
Yeah.
That makes any difference. It takes a whole year to get back to work somewhere.
like I had that at Intercom, too. You can't go to work anywhere else for 180 days.
Mine was 11 months, and it wasn't even written down.
Yeah, because people were knocking down the door to hire me. They couldn't wait to put the Rick Emerson Show on.
Well, you didn't get an offer to work all night writing and not be on the air somewhere like I did.
No, I didn't.
I was more fortunate than you.
I got an offer to do exactly dick. That's what I got an offer to do. To do exactly nothing.
Well, there was a writing job available.
Yeah. Really? Sitting next to Mark Marshall somewhere?
It was writing all night traffic. I'm sure that was a very busy job.
Writing all night traffic and making sure the breakfast burrito was heated up for the morning guy. So I'm telling you this now. I was talking to Bruce Hagler about this over the weekend because he was talking about how this IMUS thing is a big turning point and it's a shift in the cultural tone and it's a big before and after mark in radio like the Janet Jackson boob thing is. And maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. Maybe this will be a thing that everybody looks back on and they go, that's the day that it all changed is after the IMUS thing. But I don't think so. And I'll tell you why. And this is, and I swear to God, we're going to quit talking about IMUS any day now. We'll probably talk about a little bit with Peter Carlin
today.
I have
two more sound bites.
So, well, and Carlin wrote a big piece about IMUS last week. So we'll probably talk about it a little bit with him today. But then we'll move on. But so maybe this is a big cultural shift and maybe this is a big change in the radio paradigm. But I'm suspecting it's really not because, and this is just my opinion only, that I, regardless of how hideous IMUS's comments may have been, and regardless of how inappropriate they may have been, and I think many, many people have noted that the big problem with IMUS's comments is they weren't funny. Like, you can get away with almost anything on the radio if it's funny. That's the thing. I mean, you listen to any radio pro. You know what it is? I was watching Entourage last night. Now, Entourage, granted, on cable, not on the radio, but I mean, that's less and less of a distinction. Than it used to be. There used to be this thing you could, that, you know, cable, you could get away with stuff as opposed to over the air because everybody could get the over the air radio and not everybody could get cable. Cable was a little more of an exclusive audience. You had to go out of your way to watch cable. Therefore,
you're paying for it.
Right. You're paying for it. But I think that's less and less of a distinction now because I don't know anybody that does. I mean, I do know people, but generally speaking, everybody kind of has cable. Cable's everywhere. Cable's, your house just comes wired with cable now. A lot of apartments, cable is included in utilities. Cable is no longer a luxury. It's no longer a thing that only some people have. So cable and broadcast television are very much the same, culturally speaking, to me. So there is a little bit of a distinction, but not much. Anyway, so I must get sacked for these comments on WFAN. I'm watching Entourage, which is just, and the character of Ari Gold in Entourage, I mean, that show is just filled to the brim with racist humor, sexist humor, humor about people's orientation or disabilities. I mean, it's just like Don Rickles times 10. I was thinking about Don Rickles. We went to see Don Rickles at the Chinook Winds Casino. Don Rickles did 2 hours of material that made IMUS look like he worked for the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, really, it made IMUS look like Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, it just unbelievably racist humor.
It's all Rat Pack type humor.
That's it. And the reason that Entourage gets away with it and Rickles got away with it, the reason Stern gets away with it, the reason Donna might get away with it, is because it's done with a smile and it's done with humor. And it's funny. Anything can be done if it's done humorously. The problem with IMUS is it just wasn't funny. It just sounded mean. It just sounded like a grumpy old white guy who was looking at some young black girls, was rooting around in his brain for something to refer to them as, and then, of course, that's the first phrase he came up with. And it just makes him look like some old racist coot. I will say this, though. This is my final observation, and then we'll play the sound cuts, and then we'll be done with it. My final observation is this, though, that I don't think this is the big cultural turning point, the IMUS thing, that everybody else thinks it is, or that the pundits think it is, because I think there is a general sense in America that regardless of how inappropriate IMUS's comments were, that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are attention-seeking nutcases and not to be taken seriously. And I do think I think if you were to poll America, if you were to do an insta-poll of the entire country and ask them, not whether do you defend what IMUS said, but do you think the reaction was disproportionate? In other words, do you think it was a do you think it was a $5,000 punishment for a $5,000 punishment for a $50 crime?
Or do you dislike Al Sharpton just a little bit more than before this incident?
Exactly.
If not dislike him a lot more.
Exactly. Or who do you dislike more in this story, Al Sharpton or Don Imus? If you were to pull the entire
country, everyone disliked the comment.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that people dislike IMUS.
No, not at all. And just, again, totally with the caveat that no one is being asked to defend what IMUS said. But if you were to, poll the entire country and say, do you feel like it was a disproportionate punishment? And do you come out of this hating Al Sharpton a lot more than you did before? I think everybody would be on the same page there. I think there is a general sense in the country that this was overboard, too far, too much, and that Al Sharpton's a nitwit. And so, there you go. And so that's why I don't think, and I think in like a month, I think everybody will be, this will pass and everybody will be brave enough to say that out loud. That this was just, this was ridiculous. So, all right. I'm sorry, here's Tim Brown.
So here's something else from Charles, who still has his job. It is unfair to condemn Imus and his Imus in the Morning Show based on one insensitive comment.
It has left the impression, though, that this has been a steady drumbeat, the foundation, the thump-thump of the Imus in the Morning program, and it never was. I mean, it just is wrong.
Yeah, well.
And then there's Mike Francesca, Mike and the Mad Dog. He says it's completely false that the show made a point of belittling people on the air.
It has left the impression.
No, of course not.
Not at all.
This idea, as someone said, well, he targeted the wrong people. Didn't target anybody. He didn't even know that team existed. He saw a piece of tape come in front of his eyes because they played a national championship game, and he made a stupid comment.
Well, that's the problem. That's the problem right there, is that he didn't have, you know, he was looking around for a term to call some young black women, and that's the first term, that's the first word association that his brain came up with. That's the, Aaron is emailing me here, says, please don't talk about Imus, I'm having horrible flashbacks to awkward dinner conversation on Friday. Yeah, that's the other thing, I didn't mention it at the top of the show. Laura and I had dinner with Jen and Aaron, and my wife, God love her.
Was this the night when you were playing Guitar Hero?
Yes, it was, this is before that. My wife, who I love, was a great person, had a lot of red wine. My wife, who was a women's studies major in college, had a whole lot of red wine and despite my best attempts, and let's be honest, I didn't attempt all that hard, it just kept like trying to pick a fight with me about the Imus thing. Because she's on the, you know, she's on the, you know, he ought to be the first to go, followed by, and she listed by like 9 other radio hosts, some of which you may be familiar with, who also ought to be given the boot because they're jerks and a-holes and whatever. And so then poor Aaron and Jen, Laura and I are guests in their home, and poor Aaron and Jen are just trying to have dinner. And my wife, who's like half a bottle into the big thing of Burgundy, just like going out of her way to provoke me into a big, which I eventually was provoked into. So there's Laura and I having this huge fight in the middle of the living room, right in front of Aaron and Jen, who were trying to soothe the situation by giving her more wine, which didn't really have the desired effect because things just got louder and sloshier and more slurred. So that was fun. I don't want to talk about it. Here's Tim Riley.
Well, here's something else to irritate you.
Thanks.
John Kerry has reopened the door to a possible 2008 presidential campaign.
Come on!
He told the crowd at a book signing at the Tattered Cover bookstore in Denver.
Books aren't the only thing that's tattered.
That he has no desire to endorse any candidate for the office right now, choosing to wait and see how they address the issue of global warming. So he and his wife, Teresa, are kind of like Al Gore light.
I'm pretty sure that he never cared about global warming until he lost the last election and he saw how well Al Gore is polling.
Mm-hmm. So they're promoting a new book. Could that change? It might. I may change over the years. I may change over months. I can't tell you. This whole statement remains it's almost as if he's saying it right here. Could I change? I might. I may change over years. I may change over months. I can't tell you, and I'm already bored. But I've very clearly said I don't consider myself out of it forever.
What does that mean?
It's one of his typical comments. It makes no sense.
This is why no one voted for him, because you can't understand what the... At least with George Bush, you get the idea that there is a thought in there somewhere that's trying to get out through a mass of tangled diction. With John Kerry, it's just... Don't you get the feeling that John Kerry has just been... He's been in Congress for so long that he is now just institutionally incapable of saying what he thinks. Like, he physically is incapable of saying something clear and simple and to the point. Which I think is why Bill Clinton had such appeal to people. Because you got the feeling, even if Clinton was lying to you, you got the feeling that he was actually saying something clear and something concise. With John Kerry, it's all about parsing. It's all about threading the needle really carefully. So, all right, it's 503-733-2... 8970. Let's take a break here. We'll come back with more. Tim Riley returns around the corner at the Ministry of Truth. Later on, Jim Roop, top five. Talk more about Listener Party 10 coming up this Thursday. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Why, hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Yeah, that was a lot of fun on Friday. And I was grumpy anyway. It had been a bit of a week. Being kind of a long week. My wife was equally stressed, except she decided to treat that with about 15 glasses of red wine. Anywho. Aaron and so me, so Laura and I are having this gigantic fight in the middle of Aaron and Jen's the house. Aaron and Jen are just sitting there nervously looking at the ground and sort of twisting their dinner napkins in their hands, sort of shuffling back and forth in place, waiting for Laura and I to be done fighting.
It happens to all couples.
Oh, it does.
We'll return to the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley in just a moment. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. From the Ground Zero Lounge, our good friend Clyde Lewis. Hello, sir.
Hi.
What's up, brother?
Oh, my gosh. A lot of things are happening. I mean, the world is just falling apart. It's a big, big tea kettle and a tempest and a whatever they call that thing.
In a thing.
Yeah. It's a tempest in a teapot calling the kettle something. I don't know. You heard about the shooting, right?
What shooting? Yes, of course we heard about the shooting.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's pretty ugly and terrible.
Yeah, they claim this guy had six pistols strapped to him, they claim.
Six pistols? You know, I haven't even heard any of that stuff. All I've been getting is what Aaron can send me. He sent me all this numerological stuff, and it's just freaking me out, because numerology freaks me out. And believe it or not, he threw me some numbers.
I don't believe it.
What's that?
I preemptively don't believe it.
You don't believe in what? The numbers?
Whatever you're about to say. Whatever. When you say believe it or not, I would like to cast my lot with
nuts. I don't even know if I believe it. It's just one of those things where you just have to point it out. It's my life. It's my weird world. I have to point it out because it may mean something.
I like how only in your head does a shooting in Virginia somehow, it's all about you.
It's not about me.
That's the magical gift of Clyde.
No.
Is that 30 people dead in Virginia somehow exist to reinforce
it's
your
my
world
fault.
View?
It's my fault. No, actually, I was at the Ground Zero Lounge, what was it, about 2-3 weeks ago, and I was talking about the bees, and I was talking about magnetics and how they affect the brain, and I was talking about how, in fact, I just let it go. I said, you know, do you remember back in the day, maybe you left Utah before that, but do you remember that time that Vietnamese woman walked into KSL and she basically started shooting people?
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, you know why? Because she said she was hearing voices, and then 2-3 days later, some guy said he was hearing voices. He walked into the genealogical library and started shooting in there too, and come to find out that the cell phone towers in the area were pretty were like, for some reason, they were off kilter or something, so people were hearing voices and they started shooting.
Kill,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. What?
I didn't know that.
Anyway, but so, and so then what happened after that is Klebold and Harris did their thing over at Columbine, and it was just like a big hellacious shooting gallery going on, and they were talking about whether or not there should be limits on guns and gun control and all this other stuff. And so I think that's what's going to happen with this. This is going to be the big one right here, the one that we're going to start debating gun control. But in the meantime, it just seems a little odd. You just remember the guy in Trolley Square about 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah, in Utah. I'll guarantee you right now, I don't know whether these guns were legally purchased, but I'll guarantee you right now, every gun this guy used was something that you could buy legally in a store.
Oh, probably so.
I'll guarantee you.
Yeah, and they're probably going to make a big deal out of that, and it's really going to be ugly because we're going to be fighting about it. But in the meantime, it's like the guy, when they interviewed the father of the kid who did the shooting at Trolley Square, his father said that he believed that his son was getting messages in his brain from somewhere, and you know where it was, and I'm just sitting there thinking about that. Messages in your brain to start shooting. Where does that come from?
Maybe it's from his crazy defective brain.
It could be that, but then again, it could be the fact that...
Wait, hold on, don't finish this sentence. Let me guess. It could be his brain, it could be that he's crazy, it could be... I'm guessing the government.
No. It could be magnetic effects on the brain from magnetic testing of things such as laser weapons,
but that would still be the government.
Low microwave weaponry.
That would still be the government.
Well, I guess you could say.
All right.
It's the government.
Secret messages from the government. I think I'm getting a handle on your worldview.
Pretty much. But no, you look at that and you say to yourself, okay, it could be just random craziness. But when you start seeing the pattern, you know, we had a guy in Charlie Square shoot people for no reason. We had this guy at this one school with a gun, and it was really odd. The principal that was at that school was also the principal was at Kip Kinkle's school.
Yeah, he's having a bad.
Again, it's like you go from Salt Lake to Oregon to, you know, someplace in Virginia, you know, and you find out that this guy's probably like, you know, he's trained in some art of, you know, melting things with his eyes or something.
Okay, moving on.
No.
All right, I hate to do this to you this week, but we're short on time. What's going on at Ground Zero Lounge tonight?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to be talking about all this stuff, I'm sure, but I got a lot of other things I want to touch base on. And I want to say one more thing. For those of you that missed the Day Called X film that was out, that was at the Laurelhurst, there's going to be a special Q&A showing at the Ross Island Grocery on the 27th of April. And it's going to be burger cake and really cheap booze and a chance to see the film again and also see quick question and answer.
Burger
I'm also
cake.
Working on it. What's that?
Nothing. Go ahead.
And I'm also planning on doing another showing. The final showing will probably be at Dante's, but I got to get the date. And that way you can see Klingon Karaoke again, and probably Betsy will perform too. I don't know. I've got to talk these guys into doing it. They're saying, I don't know if I want to do it. But anyway, they'll probably do it.
Okay.
But in the meantime,
we'll see you this Thursday at Listener Party 10.
Yes, I'm going to be hosting it.
Doing some of the hosting duties
as
well.
Yes, I'm going to do the hosting duties, and I'll probably be drunk. So.
Fantastic. Clyde Lewis, see him at the Ground Zero Lounge tonight at 8 o'clock and groundzeromedia.org. Thank you, my friend.
We're going to be huge. We'll see you later.
Thank you. There you go. This email says, Rick, can you please have Clyde, quote, look at the numbers before a bunch of murders and strife happen? Instead of looking at them in hindsight and saying, I knew this was going to happen, it would be helpful to us all. That really is true. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
So according to Britain's Sky News, witnesses say the gunman entered the college with an ungodly amount of ammunition looking for his girlfriend. He reportedly locked students in a dormitory before opening fire. He's said to be a young Asian. Now, the interesting thing about this, I wish Clyde was still online, because there's a picture of an Asian man being handcuffed, but they said the gunman was killed. Is this a different Asian? Is there more than one Asian going to this college?
And so, and I say this now simply, I say this as an observation.
More than one Asian is usually going to a college.
I'm going to stop. I was opening my mouth. Sarah just saw me open my mouth to say something there, but I'm going to stop. I am going to say this, and this is simply my observation as a pundit. I do wonder, I hate to say this. This is where, Virginia?
Yeah.
Perhaps Virginia is one of our whiter states, I would think. I mean, is it? I don't really know anything about Virginia.
Pasty white, yes.
Pasty white. I'm wondering when the cops go through in a case like that, when they hear that it's an Asian man, you got to wonder if the cops go this through and just start handcuffing every Asian guy they see. I mean, you know? I'm just saying. I mean, how often do we see that with other non-white suspects? I mean, it doesn't ever seem to happen to white guys. The cops never seem to say, we're looking for a white man about this tall, so we're going to handcuff every white guy we see between here and the coast. That does seem to happen if it's like how often do you hear those stories where the suspect is described as being a black male, and so the cops are just handcuffing everybody with dark skin they see. You got to wonder if that went on to the school, too, where the cops go through and just every guy they see with, every guy with gold skin, it just got put in the bracelets. So, Josh, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey, I just wanted to talk to you about Clyde Lewis here.
Go figure.
Me and my coworkers here, long history with the show. I did the pictures of you in your office at the Lana Sounder. But we all want to hear what Clyde has to say. You've been a little rough on the guy lately.
Sarah was telling me that, but it's like, I feel like
you have this pent-up rage about him that whenever he comes on, you don't even let him get out his little theories before you start raving on him.
It seems true. My one other coworker, we were both thinking that it seemed like there was some hostility coming from you.
It's not that I'm hostile as such. It's just that, I don't know. I mean, first of all, I think that there's a little give and take that Clyde and I sometimes do because, and I say this with all love to Clyde, because otherwise it ends up being like 12 uninterrupted minutes of Clyde's paranoia, which can be a little off-putting, I think.
I see. And well, what about the those of us that are hearing the voices telling us to kill and we don't know what to do?
Contact me. I have a long list of people you can start with.
Okay.
No. Let me say this for the record, and everybody knows this is true. I love Clyde. Clyde and I have worked together now for 13 years. I love Clyde deeply. He's probably the most talented person that I know in radio. But Clyde also knows that I don't buy into a lot of his nitwittery. A lot of what Clyde says, I just discount as being crap, and he knows that. So I, you know, it is that sort of spice that keeps the Clyde Rick relationship alive.
All right. Well, I'm getting yelled at by my boss to get off the phone. But one last thing, Scotty, don't let the bastards get you down.
God bless you, sir. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. There you go. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
Okay, so we have 32 people killed.
Damn.
Yeah. And 29 injured. Apparently, a lot of students jumped out of windows.
So that's 61 people he shot.
Yeah.
I mean, right? We're talking about two separate figures. This is not 32 people. Well, no, that wouldn't make any sense anyway. So this is 32 people dead and then an additional 29 injured.
Mm-hmm.
That is 61 people.
Yeah.
I mean, and please don't take this as an invitation to call me and tell me the logistics of how you would do this, but I don't even understand how you would do that. And again, please don't call and ruminate on how he might have done it. This is not the time for the place.
How many police officers can possibly be in a small town that size?
I maybe I'm all kinds of stupid, color me retarded here, but I don't understand why the cops, why would you not just like storm in there and just take that guy down? I mean,
yeah, they never do that for some reason.
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, look, I'm a big bleeding heart liberal. I mean, no one's ever going to confuse me with a guy. Insert blah blah blah. I'm just saying, as big a bleeding heart as I am, as the guy's in there with a gun and he's smoking people. You go in and you do what has to be done. You go in and you take out the trash. No one's going to weep over that guy. He's dead. So did the cops just stand back and wait for the thing to just sort of burn itself out? Is that like their typical approach in something like this?
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean it's happened before.
I mean, that was the thing at Columbine, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm not trying to lay blame. I'm not a cop. I don't know what it's like. I mean, I'm sure it's a hard job most of the time under the best of circumstances. But, I mean, if some guy with a gun going door to door inside there smoking a bunch of people, it seems like at that point there's a loss of human life regardless. If I recall correctly, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but if I recall correctly, at Columbine, and again, please, if I'm wrong, I apologize, but at Columbine, the cops just sat outside. I mean, they just sat outside and they didn't charge the school. They just sat and they were like, well, we'll wait and see what happens. And I mean, seriously, I mean, what are we paying cops for? I don't mean to belittle the police, but I'm just saying, isn't that the deal? Isn't the reason that cops get so much latitude is because they are expected to put themselves in the line of fire? They are expected to put themselves in harm's way?
Correct, yes.
And so, you know, I mean, it doesn't sound like that really happened here. It sounds like they were just sort of waiting for this to finish up, and then they went inside and just sort of swept up the detritus. So, all right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. I guess we'll be finding more about this.
Well, speaking of a lack of regard for human life, it's time for the Cheney Watch.
Here's your Cheney Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Show.
Vice President Dick Cheney paid a visit to CBS's Face the Nation program yesterday. He says that the Democrats, in the end, will give the nod to President Bush's bill for the war. Number 4 in C. what am I doing?
I don't know.
We kind of like looked at each other dumbfounded.
You just did that Ron Burgundy thing of reading anything on the teleprompter in front of you.
I did.
Good night, San Diego, and go F yourself.
Here we go.
I think there are enough Democrats on the other side of the aisle who they may support the provisions that were written in the House and Senate, but if they don't have the votes to override the president's veto, that they will not leave the troops in the field without the resources they need.
What was 4 and C?
That was the number of this cut.
All right, okay.
As on my script.
So you just kept reading just everything in the type.
Speaking of that, I saw the new Will Ferrell movie over the week.
Oh, Blades of Glory. Is it good?
It's hilarious.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, because I've heard mixed reviews.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on what you think is funny and amusing.
Would you
but
say...
basically, he's the same character all the time.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is it's like everything he does now is a variation on Anchorman.
Ron Burgundy, right.
Yeah, it's because
so
that was...
Ron Burgundy on skates.
And the other movie was Ron Burgundy as a race car driver.
Right.
So would you say funnier than Anchorman or as funny?
As funny.
As funny as yeah. Anchorman. Okay, well,
same
your
type of humor.
Your endorsement weighs heavy with me, so that's you carry a lot of weight with me. Okay. Hey, did you ever watch The Iron Giant?
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it immensely.
You liked it quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
All right. See, Anna, did you like the fact that it was set in the Sputnik era?
I did.
Had that great fit. Mm-hmm. And was it Harry Connick Jr. as a beatnik?
Yes.
Which was great. So, and then all the great Superman imagery and so forth, and just had a great Cold War vibe. You've seen The Iron Giant, right? Haven't you, sir?
No, we've discussed it.
Oh, come on.
No, you're going to let me borrow it after
it hurts my heart that you haven't seen it.
I will. I will see it. As soon as you put it in my hands, I
really?
Will watch it.
Really? Is that
it.
True?
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that mean when I give it to you, you'll watch it, or when I give it to you, you'll set it on top of your TV and forget about it?
No, I'll watch it. I've kind of burned myself out on Twin Peaks right now, so right. I'm mixing it up a little
bit. The Iron Giant, really, it is, I would say, it is a masterpiece. I would say it is, and this is one of few films I can say this about, it is, especially of the recent era, it is a flawless film. It is a film without flaws. It is, and from my assessment, The Iron Giant and many dudes, you ask geeks that you know about this, especially, although it's not a geeky film. In other words, it's not a film about, you know, it's not a geek-tastic film, but it is geeks do love it because it does have a robot in it. It is a film without flaws. It is perfect. It is a perfect film. I can't think of one thing wrong with it. I can't think of anything that would be improved. I can't think of anything I would change. It is a virtually, if not entirely, flawless motion picture. So it's fantastic, and it just came out like 10 years ago. So it's great. All right, let's here's Tim Riley.
So let's move on to cut number 5 on the C Bank, shall we? Dick Cheney says Democrats will approve the Iraq funding.
It's absolutely essential. I don't think that a majority of the Democrats in the Congress want to leave America's fighting forces in harm's way without the resources they need.
No, we don't, which is why we kept trying to bring them home. We kept trying to get them out of Iraq into somewhere safer, like, you know, here. Boy, goddamn, that guy's just frightening, though. He's just terrifying. Yeah. Yeah. Dick Cheney, every time he speaks, his voice just shakes with undeniable menace.
So Democratic Senator Carl Levin lashed out at Vice President Dick Cheney on Fox News Sunday. He says America doesn't trust him, meaning Cheney.
Well, of course not. I mean, really, why? Why would we?
I pushed the start button like 2 or 3 times here, and I'm not sure exactly what's happening. Well, perhaps we'll get back to that some other...
You're gonna wait.
I have the hourglass prompt here. And the sands are not running through the hourglass. Well, we'll go on to something else and hopefully get back to that some other time,
I suppose.
How's
your woodcock doing? Oh, my darling little woodcock.
Here's Tim Riley.
Let's try this again.
He has no credibility. He's been wrong consistently on Iraq. He has misled the people.
Who's this?
Consistently on Iraq. He has misstated. He has exaggerated. And I don't think he has any credibility left.
Here's what the Democrats and liberals don't understand at this point. It pains me that I have to point these things out. Here's what Democrats don't understand is you're not going to get anywhere. I mean, what do they hope to gain by sending a Dick Cheney lied to us? Who doesn't? Really, you've overstated the point. I mean, there's really no one. Look, I mean, everybody either knows, and the people who know and don't care, you're not going to make them care. That's the thing. There is nothing left to be said or gained. In terms of Dick Cheney, the Bush administration lied to us. Everyone knows they lied. That's why there's Dick Cheney's getting those protests at BYU, which is the most conservative college in the entire country. Everybody knows this. That's just really we've exhausted that. That tool no longer works for anything. This is, let's see. Hello, sir. You have a comment about bees.
Hey, since I heard Clyde Lewis say on your program a couple of months ago that the bees were disappearing and Einstein gave it 4 years for the human race, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, since then, I've been joking with my friends about it. We've seen it pop up in different media, a couple of programs on TV in the Oregonian, for example. But then today on Paul Harvey News, he's back from vacation, he put it all together. It's called CCD, Colony Collapse Disorder. It's a cool Catholic name, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans have done some research saying it could be cell phones. and the nation of, or government of Sweden has said we've concluded that it is cell phone interfering with the radio signal, so the bees don't return to the nest. 70% of the
East Coast
bees. I
don't understand anything that we're talking about here.
All right, 70% of the East Coast beehives are empty because they're not returning to the hive.
Because of cell phones.
Well, that's what the government of Sweden says.
Okay.
And they're basing it on some research done at the Landau University in Germany.
Is this the same? Is this the same research that claims that my phone can bring down a 747? which is also not true.
So 70% of the East Coast hives are empty. 60% of the West Coast hives are empty. Scotland and Wales are particularly hard hit. There's also much of continental Europe are missing their hives. The main beekeeper of London, something like 22 out of his 30 hives have gone missing. So anyway, if you could take me out with the lost signal, I'll sing the theme song.
You'll sing what?
The theme song from Alice. Okay. What I said about the bees were true.
Okay, go ahead.
I used to be sad. I used to be shy. Funny is singing the saddest parts as I never knew why.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. All right. He redeemed himself for the bee talk with all of that. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I was wondering if you might be able to fix something that I heard on the news this morning. They're saying that the reason why they're in like two different parts of the campus.
What we heard, and Tim, correct me on this if I'm wrong, is that there were two shootings at different times.
That's correct. That's what we're being told.
Yeah, that the guy shot up a dorm. The cops closed off the dorm and thought they had him trapped in there, but he had skedaddled out a side door somewhere, went across campus, and shot up a classroom.
Oh.
And it looks like at that time they handcuffed another Asian fellow.
Yeah, so they may have also exacerbated the situation inadvertently by having the wrong Asian man in custody.
This morning on CNN, they were not elaborating that. They made it look like there was two different people.
Well, we're not encumbered by CNN's. You know? We're not encumbered by CNN's rules about reporting facts.
Time has passed, and therefore more details have become available.
That was this morning. This is now.
This is a live program, which you don't hear anyplace else.
That is true.
If you listen to a clear channel station, they're probably saying the same thing. That was recorded at 6:30 this morning.
Probably. And what else did you?
On a more positive note, I did see the new Will Ferrell movie.
Yes.
And it's a lot funnier than the Raising Metallica Knife. It's just stupid enough to be hilarious.
All right. Well, that's that guy's genius. Will Ferrell, I will say that this, to his credit, he makes things funny that normally would not be funny. Things that wouldn't even... And you know what it is? Not to sit and overanalyze comedy, because that can be tedious. But the thing about Will Ferrell is his delivery of certain lines. The example I always use, there's two of them, and they're both from Anchorman, which is his definitive work so far, in my opinion. One of which is when he says, I have many books, and they smell of rich mahogany. Now, that's funny, but it's only funny when he says it. Adam Sandler had said that, like, it wouldn't be funny. Or Rob Schneider wouldn't be funny. Or when Ron Burgundy goes home and he's talking to his dog Baxter, and he says, "What's that? You ate a wheel of cheese?" I laughed myself sick when he said wheel of cheese. It's a kind of a funny phrase, but it's the way he says it. Will Ferrell has that ability to deliver certain phrases certain way. That's what it's all about, in my opinion. So
I will admit about the movie, though, there are a couple of spots where it's almost painful to watch, where it's no longer funny. It's just, it hurts, you know, you want to end it.
Is it that John Heder guy? Is he the weak link?
No, he does a pretty good job, but there's certain things that you know are going to happen, and then when you actually see it, it's painful.
The problem with Will Ferrell movies sometimes is they get all encumbered with the plot, and it's like they have to get away from making you laugh to like wrap up the actual story, and that can be a little tedious. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
No problem.
All right, here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
So a triple geek watch.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
No.
Because everyone deserves
high
that.
High-speed modem is intolerably slow.
Having suffered all the death.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux.
No auxiliary. There's no goddamn shit. You got it?
Energize.
Spider-Man 3 made its global debut in Tokyo today. with the stars Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst taking a walk down the red carpet for the premiere. They have red carpets in Tokyo? I guess they do. In the latest film, directed by Sam Raimi, Peter Parker is juggling his photography job, schoolwork, love life, and superhero dom. He gains superpowers when his blue and red Spidey costume turns black and his dark side asserts itself, leaving him tangled in an inner struggle with two new villains, the Sandman and Venom.
Okay, I get a couple thoughts on this. First of all, does anybody anywhere really like Kirsten Dunst as a person?
No.
The answer is no. Everybody I know thinks...
Personally?
I'm just saying that everybody
I've never met the woman.
But we all get kind of a bitchy vibe off of her. Everybody I've ever talked to feels that way. Secondly,
and I just dislike her because she dated Jake Gyllenhaal for 2 years.
You screw her. She ought to be dating you. isn't it weird that they... Why did they debut the movie in Japan? That's kind of strange.
It is strange. I'm trying to see why they did that.
I mean, we live in America. We're supposed to get those things first.
I know, and how would Japanese understand what's going on?
I don't understand.
Well, they speak Japanese, do they not?
I don't think...
That is a fair point.
If you were in Japan, you would speak Japanese. That is the language of that country.
Yes. Yes, it is, Tim.
Subtitles.
I don't remember what
does
my...
Does Tobey Maguire speak Japanese?
Who's to say? He might be a man of many talents.
All right.
I don't remember what my other comment was.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Nothing more?
Mm-hmm.
Part two. 4 years after the green superhero, the Hulk hit the big screen in Ang Lee's maligned film, the muscle Marvel comic icon is making a return with Ed Norton in the title role.
See, I don't buy that. I don't believe it. I don't believe that at all. There is no way that Ed Norton is dumb enough to take that role. Because Ed Norton for the Hulk?
Oh, he would not.
That's what I'm saying. There's no way.
He used to be in the Honeymooners.
I called at the age of 180, he'll be taking the Norton? I'm surprised nobody's done that, like a sketch parody, where it's like Ed Norton as, and then he's just got like the vest, smells like a sewer. Whatever you say. it would be Ed Norton. It'd be Ed Norton in Fight Club, but it would be like the actual Ed Norton from the Honeymooners in Fight Club. Like a whole, I am Jack Smirking Revenge, you know. That's only funny to me and Tim. Doesn't matter. I don't care. Doesn't matter. Funny to me and Tim? Good enough. Ed Norton, and I will go out on a limb. I will say this. Ed Norton is the greatest actor of our generation. And when I say I mean mine. This time, he is the greatest actor of this generation, in my opinion. Period. Even above Johnny Depp, who's a close second. But I would say, in terms of the films he makes and his skill at acting, Ed Norton is the definitive actor of my generation. No one else is even close. Only Johnny Depp is close, I guess. But Ed Norton he's it. He's the gold standard for actors in my generation. The Hulk is such a step down for him. First of all, Eric Bana, taking over an Eric Bana project, what the hell is that about? And the last one was so bad. That Hulk movie is like the gold standard. That's the litmus test by which bad superhero films are judged. That and the Fantastic Four. It just runs counter to my whole notion of how the universe works if he's going to make the Hulk 2. It's so inconceivably inconceivable that I can't even conceive it. Okay. I'm sorry about that. Here's, all right. Let's move forward.
Part 3.
Your mic is off.
Part 3. I was just talking to myself.
Were you talking about killing?
I was. Computer and music player Apple Incorporated said it has sold its 100 millionth iPod. I think we touched upon this last week.
Yes.
Since the music player was introduced in 2001, there have been 10 new iPod models, including 5 generations of the iPod, 2 generations of the iPod Mini, 2 generations of iPod Nano, and 2 generations of iPod Shuffle.
Nano.
There are also 4,000 accessories made for the iPod. All overpriced.
Would you like to insert some smug comment about Apple users, Tim?
I think it's a handy gadget. It's a lifesaver on Macs. Just this morning, as a matter of fact, children were going to the zoo.
Right next to you?
I just cranked it up just a little bit more and went back into my own little world.
Don't you wish they made an iPod for your eyes so that you didn't even have to see people on the Macs? And then an iPod for your nose so that instead of the bum next to you, you smell the aroma of freshly cut grass.
Crank up the volume and hear, this is the BBC World Service. And I see children flailing in the background.
But it's just like it's happening through thick glass.
Yes.
You can't even hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Nothing like it.
Good times.
That's
all right.
Geek Watch.
I think there's your Geek Watch. I think we have to break here. Here's where we're going to have to break. Pam is calling about Tom Stool. Doug is calling about Don Ho.
Oh.
I don't think you can say that anymore, sir.
He was one of the good hoes.
Paul is going to tell us why Spider-Man debuted in Japan, and we'll have Jim Roop. All right, so stay there. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
By Grand Thor's hammer, by the Sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.